History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. We've learned they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to take a little initiative and ask a few questions and then invest enough time to listen patiently as memories from long ago take on new meaning in the here and now. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Our guest today is 100 years old, soon to turn 101 in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. He served in the Pacific as a Navy corpsman with the Marine Corps during World War II, but we always like to go back to the beginning. Bill DeGeneres is our guest today. And Bill, you told me you moved to Southern California when you were 5, but you were born in Shreveport, Louisiana. You have any memories at all of those early years in northern Louisiana at the start of the Great Depression?
No. I was 6 years old. No, I don't remember much until I remember some of the trips we took, 2 or 3 trips to California. My dad was in business with his brother, and they had some disruption, something, and I heard that his brother pulled a gun on him. So that's when we left.
That sounds like a good reason to leave.
Yeah. So we came to California. In the old days, I remember some of the old roads, and we drove a Model T out here from Louisiana, and Dad carried extra boots for the tires, because I guess they had inner tubes, but he had to have a lot of repair stuff for that and boots to put in the tires. So a lot of the roads were gravel roads in those days. So it would take us a week to get to California. It was a long drive, but we made it. And Dad was a very industrious person, and he always found work. In fact, he went to work for MGM Studios soon after he got out here, because he met some friends that worked for MGM, and they sicked him into that. And he became a set painter at MGM. He painted a big sign up on top of the lion, running for Metro Goldwyn-Mayer. He painted that a couple of times too. But that's the kind of work that he did, and we did okay. Nothing great. We did okay, you know.
Well, I guess that's where you inherited your artistic ability, but I have to ask, does that mean you got to run into some movie stars here and there, or is there a famous film that he worked on the set for that you'd like to share?
I never could get in the studios. They won't let you in the studios unless you know somebody. So after I got out of the Navy, I worked a couple places. And then before I met my wife, I went to work for Hal Roach Studios. They're the ones that produced Amos and Andy and Laurel and Hardy. And My Little Margie was working when I worked there. That was another program. Because at the time when I went into Hal Roach Studios, I became a sign painter. We did what they call the credits for movies. We'd get the list of credits, and it was hand painting lettering on a white on a black background. That would be photographed and made into a display that moved over for the beginning credits and for the ending credits of a movie, you know. So we did that. And I didn't meet too many movie stars. Arthur Lake, met a few minor, I met Hedy Lamarr one time, yeah. Oh, that's about it, yeah. Yeah, I had to work a lot, so.
I guess so, and I'm curious, you know, what it was like growing up, because there's so much Hollywood mystique, and even Venice Beach has its own mystique. But when you got to Venice, California, there in the late 1920s, and you grew up around there with your brother and your family, what was it like? What kind of stories can you tell us about those years?
Well, pretty quiet, really. Things were a lot different then. We had an electric railroad went from downtown all the way through Venice up to Santa Monica, and they get to the other end. It was a big red train. I remember that. and you get to the end of the road, and there was no way of turning the train around. They did, the train engineer would go in and reverse the seats and the connection outside, and we'd just get on and turn around and sit down to go back to Los Angeles or to somebody go back to Santa Monica. So other than that, the beach was the big excitement in those days, and that's why I'm suffering now with so many skin cancer. The sun burned me up. But I became a surfer. I had a group of people. We became a little company of surfers called Venice Paddleboard Club. And we used to go up and down the coast with that. And I spent a lot of summers with a bunch of buddies. We'd do a lot of surfing, and we'd have parties at the beach. Things was really great. In those days, traffic was nothing along the highway. I mean, you could go for half an hour and not see anybody. Not exactly, but I mean, it was so quiet. It was wonderful living in those days. You know, we had three theaters in along the beach: Venice, Ocean Park, and Santa Monica, and we had the piers. In fact, I worked on Venice Pier for a while I was in school. Worked at the Fun House, what they call it. And I worked in a place where they threw baseballs at milk bottles, knocked that over. Yeah. So, and I was working 15 cents an hour in those days. So it was good days. I enjoyed a lot of it, you know, really good. And I did well in school until, no problem, you know, other than getting my nose bled a couple of times. But, you know, it was really, I enjoyed it. I look back on it now, and it was nice. We had boyfriends and girlfriends, and we got together in parties and just got together and yak and go to the movies and the Dome Theater or the Venice Theater or the Maralta. Good days. I really enjoyed it.
Do you remember, I know this a long time ago, but do you remember as a boy having this idea, this dream or ambition of, hey, when I grow up, this is what I want to be or what I want to do?
I always thought I'd get into artwork. Because I did well in high school with the art. I had art classes every year, especially, and I had a good art teacher, Mrs. Finley, that helped me a lot. And I had a poster that I made for the San Francisco World's Fair. I think that was 1939, and I did a poster for that, and it was accepted and displayed at the World's Fair there. And then the school got it after that. And what they did with it, I don't know. But did well in artwork, and just had fun, that's all.
It may still be at Venice High School somewhere, and I understand you've got a painting at the Smithsonian we're going to hear about later. But I am curious when you realized that was something you were good at, because I've noticed a lot of people that are really talented in art don't realize they're as good as they really are. When did you figure out that you had this natural gift or talent?
Well, it was a natural, and it was developed by help from, like, my art teacher and there. And then when I went to college at Santa Monica City College, the art teacher there helped me a lot, too. And so I liked it, and I didn't think of at the time of really what I wanted to do financially about that. I just hoped I could find something that would develop me, which I did, but it was my own doing. I wasn't pushed very much. It was a need, you know, a need for money. It was something I always liked to do, and I didn't have any problem with it.
I want to ask you about December 7th, 1941, but you were already in the Navy at that point. Before we get to that date, there are a couple other things that happened in Southern California that other veterans have told me about that I'm wondering if you have a memory of. There was, of course, the Olympics that came to Los Angeles in 1932. But before that, or right around the same time, I guess, the Long Beach earthquake, I've heard, was pretty significant. Did you have any particular memories of either of those things?
Nothing around 1932. I don't remember much around there. But I remember the earthquake. In fact, my mother and I, we were down in Venice, right where the beginning of the Venice pier was, and we were walking up to the pier. I guess we were going to go up, get something to eat or something, hot dog or something. But things started really swaying. I mean, there was strung lights across the, the avenue that goes up to the pier. And my mother would kind of panicked a little bit, you know, and I grabbed her. I said, just get in the middle of the street, stand still, you'll be okay. And we looked over and we saw brick falling, hit a bus. There was a street that went close to the pier that went parallel to the ocean. And this bus was coming through, and it went by this one big building. And we saw just a few brick falling off and hitting the top of the bus there. You know, but that was the only outstanding thing that I remember about that earthquake. We did have another one at one time. I went with my mother again to we were at the Dome Theater in Ocean Park, and we were sitting in the balcony there watching a movie, and things started swinging around, you know. My mother started to jump up, you know, so I had to hold her down. But that was my experience with earthquakes. Nothing bad, but a little memorable, I should say.
I can tell. That's been a lot of years, and the memory is still very clear. And I mentioned you went in the Navy before Pearl Harbor, about 9 months before Pearl Harbor. Absolutely. You hadn't finished high school yet. You're 17 years old. What was your motivation? Why did you make that decision?
Well, my dad had been in the Navy in World War I. We'll get to that later, because he was, again, in the Navy during World War II. And he was a chief pharmacist's mate, and he did a lot of traveling in the Philippines and all in the Orient there and aboard ship. And it was very exciting to think about going out and seeing all things, other parts of the world, you know, and being aboard ship. And I kind of, in the back of my mind, always had thought I would like to do what my dad did. He didn't retire from the Navy. But my dad was born in 1898, and he went in when he was about 17, I think. And he stayed until the end of the war. I always enjoyed him telling me about some of the stuff. And in fact, he got tattoos, and I thought, no, God, I never want tattoos. He had tattoos all over his chest and his arms, you know. A tiger and a lady up across his chest. I remember that, and I thought, no, I'll never do that. But I did, when I went in the Navy. So that was my one reason I wanted to join, and I felt like I just needed something to happen. I wasn't happy in the 12th grade. And my brother graduated a semester, I guess, before I would have, and he joined the Army. That was in 1940, I guess. He joined the Army, and he got basic training into the Air Force right away. But I just made up my mind I wanted to go and join the Navy, and I told Mom and Dad that's what I wanted to do. And Dad was, of course, let the kids go, you know. And so, but I did. I enlisted, and I got my high school diploma within the first few months in the Navy. So they got it for the schooling that I went to in the Navy. My mother helped pick that up for me. So there I was in the Navy. What am I going to do now? So I wanted to go. When you get out of basic training in the Navy, they give you three options of different schoolings if you want to do when you get out of basic training, out of that. And I told them, I wanted to be an aviation machinist mate, an aviation machine mate, or a medical corpsman. So they sent me to the medical corps school. So that's what started. And it was okay because I liked it after I got into it. It was my same thing my dad did. And I stayed with that, of course, till the end of my service time.
Do you remember any moments in training that stood out that either were trying or made you chuckle a little bit? Because we hear a lot about the, you know, combat and everything that is in the movies, but sometimes there are things that aren't depicted that still stand out in your memory.
No, really, it was not a hard time. Then I enjoyed, in fact, we worked hard, did a lot of marching and bayonet exercises and flag training. The only thing is, at times I got bored, and I remember a drill instructor one time came over to me, you know, pull up your damn pants. That was a basic. Nothing really exciting happened. It was pretty good. We ate good, slept good, and I made friends while I was in the service there. And towards the end of it, I did fine. And when, on graduation, I got a notice to go to medical corps school at the Naval Hospital. So that was what they transferred me to be in my training for medical corpsman.
That would put him on the path to becoming a Marine's best friend. But America wasn't even in the war yet. When we come back, what does 100-year-old Bill DeGeneres remember about December 7th, 1941? Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 1,800 veterans will have seen their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.